Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall, and man, we're up to episode 19. Seems like we're flying through, enjoying talking about sneakers. So I'm here tonight with my guy Mike Guillory. Mike, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Not much, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Excited to, we took a day off earlier in the week, so excited to get back to chatting it up about what's going on in the sneaker world.
Yeah, always good to break it down for all our listeners out there and just kind of see what's happening in the world of sneakers.
Yeah. Before we get started, just want to shout out JBZOTC for leaving us a review on iTunes. Called us the number one sneaker podcast, said you need to listen to this podcast if you have a sneaker passion. So I don't want to take that kind of credit, but thank you. That's an awesome thing to say. Boost our egos a little bit. Yeah. I'm gonna go brag about it to my girlfriend. And we really appreciate the reviews. If you do have a second to leave us a review on iTunes, it helps us reach more people and get us out there talking to more people, and we just appreciate it. But lots of stuff to talk about tonight. So let's just get right into it. I think so. I don't know, where do you want to start, Mike?
I say let's start with sort of guys over at Packer with their old school Hyperstrike, man, that has everyone talking.
Yeah, so I guess what was it? Friday, Saturday now? It's been a few days since it happened, right?
Saturday, but, yeah.
So Packer shoes, in Jersey, Mike Packer's like the kind of owner of this longtime family business out there, and I've worked with him like a number of times over the years, whether it be with Complex and Finish Line, and just like. He's just a really OG in the sneaker game to me. And I think, you know, they basically had an Ultra Boost consortium release that was limited to 500 pairs and totally unannounced, just hit the site or hit their social and kind of old school, like out of left field, just surprise everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't even see it until, you know, a Sunday or Monday. Did you happen to see it or?
No, I heard about it after the fact. So, funny, while I had my eyes dead set on these Travis Scott ones, Mike Packer's over here dangling these Ultra Boosts behind me. I didn't even see him. So, it was, it's super cool. I'm not saying I want every shoe to be like that because, I'll be honest, I like being prepared to make a purchase, so release dates are good for me. But it's still super cool, though, like someone's walking in the Packer shoes and is like, hey, what is this? And it's like, hey, you got my size kind of deal. That's always fun. That's always part of the of being a sneaker collector, things of like just kind of unexpected come-ups. Like you had they were in store shelves and then you're online as well. I think you just threw them up there at a random time, but super cool to see. It's actually a really cool shoe. Ultra Boost 1.0 is my favorite of all the Ultra Boosts, and that color combination was solid. I mean, you can't beat that. So good job to the guys over at Packer. I can appreciate what they did there.
Yeah, I think so. I'm with you. The 1.0 is definitely my favorite of the Ultra Boosts, and it's a minimal difference, but it's just fits a little bit. To me, it feels a little bit more snug, I guess. But with this one, I thought it was dope that they used a bunch of the like super hyped colorways from, you know, the original Ultra Boost releases. And you know, just the style of the release is like, reminds me of like back in the day where you just are like surprised to see something at a store. So,
yeah,
I actually hit up Mike, over the weekend after it had happened and was just like, you know, just basically said, like, even though I didn't see him and I didn't get a chance for him to get a chance to grab a pair, it was dope to see them going back to like the surprise releases. And his quote back to me was, he said thank you, and then he said the industry needs some left turns these days. So it'll be interesting to kind of watch and see, you know, how he and the rest of the Packer team, because they've got a lot of great people working for that company now, and you know, they've been growing significantly over the past, you know, 5-10 years. And to me, I think they're poised to really do a lot more than people might expect from them. So it'll be interesting to see if they can pull some of these kind of surprise releases and just, you know, to me, it's like getting back to like the roots of like being, you know, an enthusiast about this stuff and being passionate about sneakers. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was one of the things that, I mean, I'm not against resellers, only when I want something that's too expensive. But generally, I'm like, make your money. I'm all about that. You know, being an entrepreneur is cool. But for anybody complaining about the resale game, you're messing up your sneaker pickup, this is how it goes. If you don't have those release dates, you have to be ready for anything. So super cool to see that. And is he in New York? I can't remember what Packer is.
Yeah, New York. I think.
Oh, like, that has to be awesome, man. Just all the people in and out of those cities and just probably come through a store on a weekend. That'd be such a cool sight.
Yeah, I think they their original store is in, I can't remember if the original store is in Teaneck, New Jersey, I believe. And then I think I don't know how many stores they have now. I know they've got one. They've had a few over the years, and like the it's been a family business for over 100 years, I think.
Look at those guys. Good job.
Super dope. And to your point about the resale thing, I'm with you. I mean, it hurts when you see people like, you know, I guess like transition into the next conversation, but it hurts when you see people, you know, pick up Travis Scott's and then, you know, just price gouge crazy. You know, I saw guys on Twitter saying, you know, asking for $2,000 for Travis Scott's, and I just thought, man, that's nuts.
Oh, they're cool, but I'm not $2,000 cool.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I rarely spend more than retail, just because I just feel like there's so many good shoes out there that if I'm gonna spend the money, I may as well get the stuff, you know, without paying a crazy price. But just looking at like at StockX on the prices for these Packer Ultra Boosts, you know, like, They're selling for like, you know, $365, $400, somewhere in that range. You know, probably $220 retail, I think. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, I'd rather miss a release completely, like I did with this Packer Ultra Boost release, and then deal with the frustration of like the sneakers app not working on the Travis Scott release.
I'm not working, maybe an understatement. I think it just completely fell apart. Servers blew off the walls. It just didn't work.
Yeah. I just feel like there's, I mean, I've worked in the sneaker business long enough to where I know that there's very few things that are released as a product available to the public that get as much crazy demand from like the regular consumers, from bots, from people just trying to like, you know, essentially like hack the system to make purchases. Like, sneakers are really unique in that, you know, there's not very many things. I mean, this is why for the most part, you know, over the years, Apple has never tried to release, you know, phones online in like mass quantity, and they do this kind of staged and staggered, like, well, you can pre-order and you can get it early and you can pick it up, or you can pre-order it early, you can get it in the stores, because they try to break up that huge demand that everybody wants to have the newest, latest, greatest phone. But that's really the only thing I can think of that has the same kind of crazy demand. I mean, yeah, you can look at Supreme, but I just group Supreme into the sneaker thing. You know, those kind of releases
it's the same
are just
culture. I mean, same people buying sneakers are same people buying Supreme in most cases.
Yeah. But like with the Nike app, I was just going to say the Nike app, you know, it as much as like it's frustrating and I think that they should be able to do better because they're, you know, obviously a huge company with plenty of resources to make something work. I also totally understand that, like, there's, especially if people are able to get $1,000 out of a shoe or you know, like $500 profit off of a shoe, they're going to run thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of bots trying to get into it. So,
oh yeah. They're going to cover all the bases because this was not only was a cool shoe, but it was, this was the cash cow of the sneaker community as of now. I don't know if there's anything else coming out next. Like, I guess 7 months. Then I'm like, well, to be honest, I love the shoes. But my first thought was, I'm like, not to resell it, but I was like, man, I can trade this for like four other shoes I want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I look at it too. I mean, to me, once you get to, you know, let's say close to double the retail, I start thinking about, well, I'd rather have multiple shoes than one shoe. It's pretty rare that I would rather have that one crazy shoe. You know, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I have some favorites, like Shatter Backboard Ones, Tiffany Dunks, like all of those kind of like will always, you know, be levels above every other shoe that I could potentially get, even though they're worth more. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
I understand that. Yeah, I mean, and the two shoes you mentioned, I mean, this is not, I don't want to take anything away from this Cactus Jack 1, but the two shoes you mentioned kind of reached a whole like legendary status of their own. I feel like even though the resale value on that Travis Scott is so high, I feel like it's still more of a, it's going to be really, really hype because of who he is. And I think eventually those prices will come down, but those two sneakers, just for example, are always going to be kind of, you know, in that grail category of like, hey, the original Diamond Dunk or the, you know, original Shattered Backboard are always going to be, I feel like a tier above the Travis Scott.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think that if it was, if there wasn't such an issue with the quality, I think the Travis Scott Jordan 4 is actually a much better looking shoe than the Travis Scott 1.
You know what? I actually like, of the Travis Scotts, I like all of them, but my favorite one is actually the, is it the Sail Color Air Force 1?
Yeah. I think he's done really well on all of them. Don't get me wrong. Like, I just think personally, I think for me, there's always that nostalgic aspect where, if you can tie in your roots somehow, right? Shout out to our t-shirts and Know Your Roots t-shirts on Sneaker History. Hey. If you want to cop one. Shameless plug.
But get one, guys.
But for real, like, I think, you know, being able to, especially being somebody that's super famous, you know, obviously being from Houston and the Oilers is even like taking it back, you know, how to his childhood, basically. And and that to me is like definitely just commendable when people are able to do that. And because, you know, he's as much a product of LA and the Kardashians now as he is Houston, right? Like his life is spread across everything. So to like kind of hold on to those, you know, roots, and as you're creating new product and new stories, to me, that's really dope. I think we've had this conversation before, but 99% of the time, I'm just not into brown on my shoes. It's maybe, you know, aside from, you know, when I'm wearing dress shoes, right? Like if you're wearing like hard bottoms or something, that's totally different than, you know, wearing sneakers. But brown sneakers, you know, there's very few that I can think of that really stood out. You know, like there was, if anybody remembers, like the Escape Pack from way back, like maybe, I think that might be even like 2003. There were some Air Force Ones back in the day. You know, like the, obviously Mocha 3s and stuff like that, but.
Yeah. It's just minimal brown.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I saw on Jacques Slade, on Cousteau's Instagram, I think the guy's name was Marco's Mind, if I remember right. I don't know why that stuck out in my head, but he switched the swoosh around on the Travis Scott. So instead of it being backwards, he flipped it forward. That looks really dope to me. It's just like super oversized. So that was kind of a cool thing to see. I love seeing people mix it up, especially on a shoe that you know, might have otherwise been like just resold, basically, right? Like to take that and turn it around. Because I always think of, like, at the end of the day, if I saw somebody walking down the street with Travis Scott's on, but the swoosh was facing the right direction, I would definitely, like, it would definitely make me turn my head, make me say what's up to them and ask them about it, you know?
Yeah, you'd have to. The conversation started at that point, like, wait, your check is right.
Yeah.
Why is that happening?
Yep. So you never know, too, because, like, we've seen so many, like, weird, you know, missteps in the manufacturing where that potentially could be just a like one off mistake from the factory. But
but it worked. Everyone loved them. I mean, they're a great shoe. I mean, right now, I still think it's too early to talk about it, but it's definitely front runner for sneakers of the year, I think. So
yeah,
we'll have to revisit that back in these, our future December. When that time comes, but be a good, you know, I was salty for the moment for not getting them, but I've moved on and we'll see what happens next. That's the beauty of the sneaker world. There's always something next and something you can appreciate. So no reason to stay salty for too long.
Yeah. Speaking of next, I'm gonna let you talk about this one, but, good call on the 5-year anniversary of the Adidas Pure Boost.
Man, the Pure Boost was my first Boost shoe ever. And actually, I have the release color, that Heather Gray. Not Heather Gray. The women's release was Heather Gray, which I think actually looks way nicer than the men's. But the Pure Boost is, I think, highly underrated and got completely overshadowed by the Ultra Boost. It was the first to do the no insole, but direct foot boost. I honestly, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but I feel like it had a thicker slab of boost in it than the Ultra Boost did.
Say that again? I'm sorry.
No, I feel like the Pure Boost actually had a thicker slab of boost than the Ultra Boost did.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I want to say you're right. I wonder. You know, this is why I wish Tiffany Beers was still doing YouTube videos, because she was breaking down this kind of stuff. But I just think, like, the Pure Boost is, the Pure Boost is definitely underrated, and I think you nailed it with the Ultra Boost. Just overshadowed so much that came out from Adidas. I mean, the only thing that really kind of survived along with the Ultra Boost was the NMD, which, you know, I think came out a little bit sooner, but it was just a little bit of nostalgia to it, but it was also like people were transitioning from like everyone wearing Roshis to, you know, something that was very similar. The Pure Boost to me, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I would say that it was more comfortable than the Ultra Boost, but I do think that the cushioning was better on the Pure Boost than on the Ultra Boost.
Yeah.
The Ultra Boost for me has a little bit better. I just like the way that it fit around the ankle and around, you know, like the top of your foot, comparatively.
Oh, way more secure than a neoprene on the Pure Boost. I agree.
Yeah. And I think like the Pure Boost has that like extra, extra stitching around like the collar around the ankle, which depending on what socks you're wearing could rub on your ankle a little bit funky, where the Ultra Boost being like almost like a one piece upper just had that little bit better. But that said, like $180 for Ultra Boost, because the Pure Boost didn't get as much hype, man, you could pick those shoes up for 40, 60 bucks in like crazy colorways. I mean, there was even like, I remember Reigning Champ had collabs. I was able to grab those for, I don't even remember. I don't think I paid more than like 50 or 60 bucks for them. And I mean, that's an amazing shoe.
Oh, dang.
Crazy quality. Like the materials on it are super dope and super comfortable. But yeah, 5 years is kind of crazy though.
Yeah, I actually pulled mine out as we were talking about. I just want to look at them and like the, I'm surprised. I wore the mess out of these. The rubber that, you know, that covers the boost on the outsole, still in good shape. And this was before they switched over to Continental rubber. And actually my Ultra Boost are first generation before Continental rubber outsoles. And I mean, they held up very well. I'm looking at like just the, there's no snagging on the neoprene. There's no, you know how after a while the boost starts to kind of erode at the bottom, starts getting holes in it. This feels like it's in good shape. I think this is just a good quality shoe overall, just because of the shape and the, like you said, upper materials. Neoprene is usually definitely seen more in performance shoes. So, and that's one of those things that I guess people always will kind of steer away from Adidas because it's purely performance based. They're not, they don't have that, that kind of street look until they did the Ultra Boost, of course. But this was such a slept on sneaker, and we can't say that it didn't have the back, that height backing, because I was going back through a little research before we started, and this was like the shoe that Kanye wore before the Ultra Boost. He talked up so much about how comfortable it was. There's pictures of him playing basketball in it, which I say would be ill advised to do, but he definitely wore these a lot. So I don't know. Maybe just like I said, Ultra Boost came out and just was a giant and kind of cannibalized this shoe a bit. And you say you started getting really great collaborations that were you found for 40, 50 bucks as opposed to the 120, 130 price point they were. I guess the only saving grace I would see in the shoe in consumer wise was the Y3 version of it, which was not too much different, but just a little bit different, like a little nicer material top, a little thicker material, which I think that's just still a couple hundred bucks if you can find it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know. So let's throw that out to our listeners. Have you tried the Adidas Pure Boost for one? I'm kind of curious because I think a lot of people just missed it because there wasn't enough like hype around it to pay attention, like, and there was so many Ultra Boosts coming out that like you said, it just got overshadowed. So I'm curious, like, did you guys try the Ultra Boost or did you try the Pure Boost? Have you worn the Pure Boost? If so, like, would you say it's more comfortable than the Ultra Boost? How do you guys feel about it? Let us know. Leave us a comment on Instagram, Twitter, wherever. We just love to hear your feedback.
Yep, and the 2014 Ultra Boost, not the new one, not the I'm sorry, not the 2014 Pure Boost that we're looking for, not the new Ultra Boost Lite, basically they have out now.
Yeah, it is crazy though because they're really trying to kind of continue on. I mean, no knock to them, you know, they've got a they got a good formula there that seems to be working for the most part. I even see people wearing, you know, wearing boosts that I wouldn't expect to see, you know, like older people clearly not into any of the like hype stuff or paying attention to the sneaker world like we would be. But Adidas is definitely trying to hold on by making minimal changes to some of the products that they're putting out. So
yeah, they're selling them. Like I say, if it's not the Ultra Boost, there's all those different boosts that people have in their feet. Energy Boost, I think there's Solar Boost, there's a bunch of different ones out there.
Switching it up, the main thing we wanted to talk about tonight is Zion Williamson. So Mike found an interesting article on Footwear News, and I think that I'd been having the same thoughts after watching the draft, seeing the Knicks miss the opportunity, you know, like seeing the Pelicans get the number one pick. I think we all believe that Zion is going to go to the Pelicans, right?
Yeah.
And so the conversation that Footwear News had was with Sonny Vaccaro's. And if you don't know who Sonny Vaccaro is, he basically was like worked in sports marketing for Nike before sports marketing was an actual thing. So he signed Michael Jordan to his first sneaker deal, and then ended up leaving Nike for Adidas. Later worked at Reebok, I believe. He also started the ABCD All-American Camp, which was like, you know, basically the first kind of all-star, high school all-star. You know, now you've got kind of like the McDonald's All-American, the Jordan Brand Classic, Under Armour's got theirs, Adidas has got theirs. But Sonny Vaccaro basically in the 80s kind of established the connection from high school to college to pros on the business side of sneakers as we know it today. So, you know, the ABCD camp was like, you know, Kobe, Dwight, LeBron, all those, everybody basically went through that. He's essentially like the godfather of like the signature sneaker deal. If you haven't seen, there's an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary called Soul Man from a few years back that is definitely worth watching. Gives you an insight into like what that
amazing watch.
Yeah. What that world looked like before, you know, because now we get to see all this stuff for better or worse. Like we can all have a conversation about Zion Williamson and potentially missing out an opportunity by not signing his sneaker deal before the draft, because, you know, clearly being in New Orleans with the Pelicans is not as good. It's not a big of market as New York or Los Angeles. So the conversation that Footwear News is having is with Sonny Vaccaro is basically saying, you know, unless he gets strategic about his negotiating right now, he's going to leave a lot of money on the table because he's not going to go to one of those big, huge markets. But I don't know. What do you think, Mike? You think, I mean, I guess we'll wait till the end to see like who you think he's going to sign with, but how do you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of stinks when I really sit and think about it as you're talking. And then as we talked about it earlier, it's like everything when it comes to sports drafts, it's all chance. I mean, you have some room to leverage a bit, some room to wiggle a bit, very little bit. But this all came to James. His destiny in the NBA was all based on a ping pong ball. He had no control over it.
Yeah,
what are you going to say?
Crazy.
Don't be as good so you don't go number one? I mean, now this is a whole different issue. But, man, it stinks because Sonny has a great point. He made a good point of saying that if he would have went to New York, he could have found major money and business deals as soon as he got the plane. In Louisiana, people won't even purchase a billboard out there with him on it because it's too expensive. There's not the same money in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So with that being said, the marketing is going to be who you're going to market to. You're not going to be able to put his face out there as much. Yeah, you can. I mean, you can put it out there around the Smoothie King Arena, wherever they play. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to have the same effect. I mean, the average income is just so much lower in Louisiana, New Orleans, than it would be in New York or heck, anywhere else. Almost like it's just he's not going to get the same exposure, and it stinks because that swung the deal from him being in control to them being in control.
Yeah.
And it's good. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, that thinking about like New York or Los Angeles, and I mean, this happens in Houston too. Like, you know, I'm sure for you, you see it, but like, it's very outside of those, you know, maybe top five major cities. The thing that I think about the most is like all the other like secondary deals, right? Where, yeah, like the shoe deal is the biggest opportunity for him. If he signs, you know, let's say this is not anywhere close to what he's going to get, but like $100 million deal with Nike, then everybody after that, the local Chevy dealer, the local, you know, pizza place, the local, like everything down the chain when you're in New York or LA becomes a thing. So you could, in my mind, you know, someone as sought after and like hyped up as Zion and as talented as Zion, he probably would have, you know, a dozen, you know, in New York, he's probably literally like, you know, sponsored by somebody for breakfast, sponsored by somebody, you know, he's getting like, you know, Eisenhower's sandwiches to sponsor him for breakfast. You know, he's getting, you know, what's the, you know, Shake Shack sponsoring him for lunch. He's got like the you know, the 2 a.m. sponsorship from Halal Guys. Like that's, yeah. If I'm his agent, that's how I'm approaching it. I'm literally just going like everything about my life for the next 10, 15 years as I'm a professional athlete becomes something that should be sponsored in some sense, right? Not saying that he should just go take a bunch of money for something that he doesn't like, but in New York, that kind of stuff works, right? Like, you know, you see your favorite player on the subway on the way home, and it reminds you of like, damn, yeah, I got to go get Halal Guys before I get home, you know, or I got to go get a slice of pizza and a beef patty. Like, that's just how it is. So it's kind of sad to see that he won't be going, you know, in theory, he won't be going to one of these big markets. But, I also thought there was the, you know, you brought up earlier, before we started recording, the idea of bringing in, Anta or some other potential like Chinese company to kind of push the deal. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, reading a little deeper into the article, Sonny was actually advising Zion and his family just kind of how to navigate through this whole sneaker free agency. And he ultimately says it's a two-man race, Nike and Adidas. We all kind of guessed it. I think everyone may have thought that there were some outliers with possibly Puma or Under Armour. But his advice to the family was get Anta involved, because Anta can bring in money that, you know, Under Armour, Puma can't. They have a lot of wiggle room, and they would pay him so much money because, let's be honest, he's going to be an international star as soon as he touches the court. But even if he doesn't take the Anta deal, it is a bargaining chip to drive the deals higher from Nike and Adidas, and maybe bring in someone else who's like, you know what, forget it, I'll go ahead and throw in, you know, this $150 million. So I think it's a great idea. I mean, hopefully they continue with that plan. But I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of hoping he pulls the Kobe Bryant and threatens to like play overseas if he doesn't get a trade somewhere else.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he's so, without putting any names out there, like I know some people that have worked with him fairly closely on the basketball side throughout, you know, his earlier days before Duke, basically. And, you know, he's got a little bit of taste of with every brand, right? He obviously wore Nike at Duke for the year that he was there. He played in Adidas, you know, AAU. He played in Under Armour at the Elite 24 tournament, you know, was that two years ago? Maybe three now. But I think that he has, you know, he definitely could use, it sounds like from the quotes in the story, it sounds like Sonny Vaccaro is no longer like involved with the family in regards to this stuff. But
you know what, that's a good point, because I couldn't quite tell if he's still involved or not, but I know he was at least consulting for a little bit.
Yeah. But his point about bringing in, you know, like someone like Anta or you know, Peak or Leaning or something like that, is actually really interesting, because I think that those brands continue to make better and better product. You know, I don't know if you, anybody that's listening that looks at like performance basketball reviews, right? Nightwing and the Wear Testers crew are pretty good about getting their hands on all the shoes that come out to hoop in.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I think that they do a good job of showing that even though we have this weird, you know, kind of egotistical American standard of like, no, we don't want these Chinese companies' shoes because they're cheap. Like, if you look at the performance reviews on Wear Testers, there's a lot of good shoes out there that come from these brands. And I think that, you know, with that in mind, someone like Zion, who's kind of at an interesting time where he could be bigger than the NBA in the United States if he has the right people surrounding him and the right people kind of marketing him and his persona and his abilities. Because basketball is, you know, like Kobe is one of the few that has been like just stupidly successful overseas, right? I think a lot of players find a little bit of success, and a little bit of success overseas translates to like being like a, you know, a superstar, you know, because there's just so many more people that can buy your product, that can support your brand. And that's what makes me think that he really could potentially do something, you know, and bring in one of these other Chinese brands that could pay him. They would easily be able to pay him more if they wanted to. It might hurt his initial sales in the US, but you know, there's some great, I mean, I know people that are designing for a lot of those brands now that used to be at Nike and Adidas, and you know, they have, you know, products that they've put out that, you know, people would consider probably, I don't know, like classic or iconic or anything like that, but like good shoes in the history of their career, and that are at these kind of companies like Anta and Peak and Li-Ning and these Chinese companies. So to me, it's just a matter of switching up the way that you market it. If you're Zion, and they come to the table with, you know, enough money that you're going to step away from, you know, Nike or Adidas, considering they're kind of put at number one and number two, man, the potential is almost limitless. You just have to do it the right way, in my opinion. So, I'm excited to see what happens from it.
Yeah, I just want to make, like, for him, if he goes for one of those overseas brand, just make sure they have the resources that the Nikes and Adidas have when it comes to their R&D and like the crazy things they can do like for at the facilities for you, because I think a lot of times picking the right or wrong brand can make or break your career just because of the technology and like the resources at your hand. I think if you have to go with an overseas brand, I think Li-Ning has done such a great job with Dwayne Wade's Way of Wade line. I think he can. Li-Ning clearly has already been sustainable with that line, and those things are like myths to get a hold of. They're unicorns in their own right. I have never actually seen one in person, and I've tried to purchase them from their site, and they're always sold out. But if he's gonna be the star that we think he's going to be, they use that same design team to give him something that, like, a good-looking shoe like that, because the Way of Way is a good-looking shoe. Give him something different, of course, but also that's going to appeal to the masses. And sell it. Get their foot in the Foot Lockers, Champs, all those spots. That can be a game-changer. That could literally mess up, like, the sneaker hierarchy as we know it, if they can do it just right. I think it'd be insane. It'd be cool to see. I mean, of course, I'm always been, you know, the big two, like Nike and Adidas, fans of those. But I would love to see the game get disrupted by something like that. It's good for sneakers. That means that it's going to push these other guys to produce even better technology and better product for us. So, I don't know. I say let's not limit it to what we know. Let's hear everything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the other interesting thing about thinking about that, you know, I think the key point of that is everybody's ready for the disruption, right? Everybody's ready for something different. Nobody's making basketball shoes that are, you know, we talked about in the last episode, like, is anybody making shoes that you're going to look back and want retroed 10, 20 years from now? And there's nothing that stands out in anybody's mind. Of course, you know, if you're a fan of LeBron, if you're a fan of, you know, KD, Dwayne Wade, anybody with a signature shoe, you're going to look back and probably want that nostalgia again 10 or 20 years from now. But the basketball shoes have been on such a decline in terms of sales, in terms of popularity, you know, even just like in casual wear, they've, you know, pretty much disappeared. That's why you see, you know, LeBron and John Elliott coming out with the Icon again to give people something to wear that represents LeBron, but in like a fashion, you know, sense. Right. And thinking about that, you know, everybody, I would even argue that brands like Puma, brands like New Balance, putting their hat in the ring for basketball, like everybody's looking at basketball shoes right now going, you know, what's going to be, when's the shift going to happen? When are we going to go back to basketball? Yep. When is basketball going to become the king of sneakers again, the way it was, you know, in the 90s or 80s or you know, 2000s, right? And that to me is just an exciting, it's just an exciting time, right? Because it gets more people putting their hat in the ring to say, hey, we want to be a part of this. We want to be the one that shifts this culture around basketball and brings the culture of sneakers back into the basketball space. Because, you know, even though fashion obviously drives so much of what's going on now, but if you think about like Off-White, right? Off-White has hit its limit, in my opinion, on the fashion side of things. That's why you see Virgil going to a more like rugged trail shoe, trying to show like people wearing track shoes. I mean, damn near track spikes that are Off-White brand, you know, Off-White collab.
I agree.
And there's this in between space where, you know, you're not going to have someone like, you know, I don't envision, you know, Virgil or Kanye making full-on performance basketball shoes, but you know, we saw it with Kanye looking at like making Yeezy basketball shoes. We know that the kind of connection to hoops has to be made, and we have to get back to that in some sense, because it's just a huge, there's just so many people that play basketball that are buying basketball shoes and buying basketball product, that I think the sneaker industry almost is better off, you know, with basketball being successful, regardless of, you know, and you know, I'm biased because I work in this business and I have for a really long time. And it's not to say that, you know, other sports, running, you know, skateboarding, even just like CrossFit and like cross training type stuff, like I love and appreciate those things the same way, because you know, I'm just like super passionate about footwear in general. But I really do think that basketball drives so much like ongoing passion. Like it's like it's one of those things where you just don't grow out of, because the NBA has done such a good job of keeping people interested and keeping like the standard of entertainment up there, where other sports have had all of their, you know, missteps and you know, issues, in my opinion. But I don't know. It's going to be crazy to see. I mean, I think Zion is, I mean, he's LeBron level talent. I don't know that, you know, I think I said this in a previous episode. I don't know that he has like the personality to be pushing, you know, product the way that LeBron does, but I think with the right people around him to kind of guide him, and the fact that he's even been having conversations with Sonny Vaccaro says a lot about who, about his understanding of like just how big it can be.
So. Yeah. And I don't think he, so from my understanding, he actually doesn't have an agent yet. So he can, if he wanted to, I know he's not going to because it'd be terrible, but he can go back to school if he wanted to go back next season because he has no agent as of yet. Now, which leads me, I'm going to go down this little rabbit hole for a second, but which leads me to think that he's going to end up with Clutch Sports because LeBron's not dumb. He knows that this guy is going to be a force, and why not take him under his wing? LeBron has a few more years left. He's getting up there in age now. Why not represent the guy who's going to be the next year and help him navigate this world? Like, make sure if he does get stuck in a bad situation team-wise, at least help him succeed the business side. So I like to see what happens there because I feel like LeBron's going to end up being his kid's mentor just because he's getting the same attention LeBron was getting, but when LeBron was coming out of high school, and he's Zion's the most prolific player to be in the draft since LeBron. So I like to see where that goes. And I think when I say it, think of it that way, I think I know where he's going sneaker-wise, which is probably not a big secret.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. You know, I think I don't know enough about like the agency side of basketball, or I guess like sports in general, right? But I will say that there's, you know, you've got Clutch Sports, basically LeBron's camp. You've got Jay-Z and the Rock sports stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the kind of like, I don't know, like not as like in your face about, you know, they're not as like the smaller companies, like, and they might not even be smaller companies, but like Goodwin Sports does, you know, they're like Dame's management company, mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan, you know, that they've got people there that really understand the sneaker side of things too, that I really appreciate. And I think you see that with those players, right? Like DeMar wearing mm-hmm. all the different Kobes, you know, Dame's Adidas might not be like the most like hyped or sought after shoes, but the way that they're able to put out colorways and tell stories, I think, is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see who he goes with in terms of like an agent. But I didn't even really think about that until you said that. If he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't have an agent, then he can still go back to school. That's a crazy, crazy, crazy thought that he could just be like, nah, I don't want to play for the Pelicans, so I'm going to wait till next year and try it again.
That would be the biggest wake-up call to the Pelicans to fix whatever's going on with them.
Yeah, I mean, if he did, like, Duke is one of those schools that I think he could still continue to be a huge star. And, you know, assuming he doesn't have, like, you know, a blowout like he did with that PG shoe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a risk that he might injure himself, but I don't think from a skill standpoint that going back to school would hurt him at all. I don't know.
No, yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I don't see him leaving the money on the table. I mean, he's been ready for the NBA since he's been like in eighth grade. So.
Yeah, yep. But yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, I don't know. Let us know what you think. Where's Zion going? Is he gonna sign with an agent? Is he gonna, you know, get picked up by the Pelicans, be in the NBA? And then, like, what's his shoe deal going to look like? I mean, it's crazy that it's all still up in the air right now. You know, and maybe behind the scenes it's not, but they've done a good job of keeping it under wraps at least until this point. So, I'll be curious to hear what everybody thinks. So leave us a comment. We'll throw this one up on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. And, you know, leave us a comment. Or if you listen to us on any of the platforms where you can leave comments, SoundCloud, you know, leave us a comment there. We'd love to hear what you think. But before we get out of here, Mike, any shoes that you're looking at this weekend?
Not this weekend, but next weekend. I have to say the Jordan 1 lows have reignited my extreme love for like skateboarding and like extreme sports. So I am going to be eyeing a pair of either one of the Jordan 1 SB collaborations, either the Laker colorway or the light bone colorway on the 25th.
Yeah, I just saw earlier today. Was it earlier today? I think it was earlier today. Nothing this weekend for me that I mean, I like to get some of those Fear of God Air Raids, one the black and gray, because that's like one of my favorite shoes
Not
ever.
Not bad.
But, but again, one of those shoes that probably won't be attainable. But I just want to say the Jordan 3 Tinker with the black and gray. I don't know if you saw that popped up today, man.
It's a clean shoe. I like it.
Yeah, that one looks pretty good. I didn't think that I would really want any more of those Tinkers, but I like that one. So, but yeah, we're running a little bit long, so let's wrap it up. And if you're listening still, thanks for listening. Let us know what shoes you're looking at this weekend, what you're picking up, and you can just give us a review. That'd be dope too. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter. My name's Nick Engvall, and Mike, let them know how they can find you.
Yeah, Mike Guillory, you guys will find me on Sneaker History. Find me on Instagram, find me on Twitter under MadWatcher789. Again, thank you all for the support. Thank you for the comments. Let us know what we can do to get better. Let us know what you like. Let us know what shoes you're looking at. We'd love to talk about it with you guys. So, again, appreciate you.
Yes, sir. That wraps it up. Episode number 19. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Peace.
See you guys.
Hey, what up, guys? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to let you know a couple things we're working on here at Sneaker History. We're about to start a weekly newsletter to share some of the things that we find from around the web that's interesting, entertaining, newsworthy stuff. And instead of putting it all on social, maybe it's not worth posting on the blog, but we wanted it to just be on your radar. So it's kind of like a compilation of our favorite things from the week. And we'll be sending that out on Sundays just to make sure that you have the news from the previous week and maybe some news about the upcoming week in terms of releases, you know, changes in release dates, etc. You can sign up for that now at sneakerhistory.com. The second thing is that we finally launched a web store to sell some Sneaker History merchandise. So far, we've got some tees, stickers, coffee mugs, and some other goods in the works. And the money we make from this will go to pay for hosting and production of things like this podcast. You can find that on the top right menu of our website. If you do cop some merch, be sure to tag us in your social posts so we can repost. Thanks again for all your support, and we'll catch you next time. Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.